Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 72 of the Alexi Sale podcast.
So how do you feel enjoying? Do you enjoy doing these more laid-back conversational, loosey-magoosey,
not pristine, not polished? Yeah, definitely. It seems easier, really. I'm desperate, obviously desperate for the recognition of strangers. So the fact that this proves slightly more popular than what we were doing before, helps. I think also it's actually better to, I mean, it gives me, in a sense, it's a way to respond in a small way to the events of the week. I think I appreciate having that outlet, so that's also, you know, to just talk about what's going on during the week is I think better than waiting for an invitation to go on Laura Koonsberg or you know, writing an angry letter to the Camden New Journal or, you know, whatever, really. There is a way in a small way to respond. And that's useful. I mean, it's useful just to get that out, but I think it's also useful as a, hopefully as a, you know, in the broader context of my work, really, to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, glad to hear that.
Yeah. So, several things. Obviously, I went on the. Were you on the demo on Saturday? I went on the.
I can't lie. I missed it.
Were you, traitor? Yeah,
I know. I'm sorry.
Well, I was there.
It was my birthday weekend, and I was extremely in pain. Yeah.
Yeah. I was there representing the Alexi Sale podcast, and yes. It was. Big. I mean, it looked huge. PS is well over 100,000.
Yeah,
200,000. Amazingly well behaved as normal, and it's kind of got them. You know. Obviously, one hopes that something more will grow out of these demonstrations, and the fact that we can get 150,000, 200,000 people on the streets. 15, 16 months in is remarkable, really. I wasn't at the head or anything. I just walked along with me.
Mm. Classic style.
With me bicycle, yeah.
Did you take your long staff, your short staff with you?
No, I think I'd probably it'd be viewed as a weapon, wouldn't it?
Nah, it's a walking stick.
As
long as you have a white beard, you're allowed to hold a long stick.
Yeah.
There's this fellow who goes to my supermarket, and I want to interview him or something. He's like older guy, bigger guy, white beard, long hair in like a long ponytail. And he rides a mobility scooter around the supermarket. And his scooter is like adorned with like strings and like shells and stuff.
Right.
And he carries this staff, like a Gandalf style staff.
Okay.
And he's basically an elderly Viking on a mobility scooter.
Right. Is his mobility scooter one of them easy rider ones like we saw in Canvey Island that time?
Or like it's a three wheeler.
Yeah.
It's a three wheeler.
They're all three wheelers. Yeah.
So it's not, you get these big four wheeler ones. Easy. Yeah. It's like, almost a motorbike. Is that what you mean? Like it's looking.
Yeah.
And he's just so cool and collected, and he's got a basket on the front of his scooter. And when he reverses round corners, it makes the most horrendous noise. But he's always smiling, and he's just this supermarket Viking, and I fucking love him. Why am I saying that? Oh yeah, because of your long.
Yeah, because the staff. I think probably if he's attacked, he could use it as a.
As
a weapon.
He's got some protection. And it's nothing more satisfying than seeing those videos, the aerial shot of the march, when they shoot the bridge, and then you see the road along the river behind it, and it's just masses of people.
Yeah.
And you're seeing, like, the bridge is completely packed, and all the way down the river, the road is completely packed, and it just shows you, it's such a good...
Yeah.
showing of the scale of it and how many people are there. It's so satisfying to see that. And I was gutted not to make it this time.
The counter, as we get bigger and bigger, the shitty little counter demonstrations of Zionists seem to get smaller and smaller as well.
That's good.
Very tiny little group. But sort of talking of that, I noticed reading in the Guardian, there's a very, very good documentary on BBC at the moment called, I think, How to Survive a War Zone, about children, three children in Gaza, and the some of those the pro-Israel bastards have dug up the fact that the main narrator, this kid, is the son of a deputy agriculture minister in the Hamas government. And therefore, you know, they're saying, how could you have a documentary, the son of a terrorist? Yeah. And there's, I think there's the 45 of those pro-Israeli shites, Danny Cohen, Tracy Ann Oberman, those people have sent in a letter to the BBC asking that it not be shown again, but it is. I think it's still up at the moment. The BBC have been shown some bravery for once and have added just an explanation of who the kid is, I think, and have refused to take it down at the moment. It might be an idea if somebody on our side organises a letter. I mean, commending the BBC for making it. But also, you know, the usual, you know, Jewish.
It's true. As much as people will throw red paint at their doors and protest, it's important also to say this is right when they do something.
Yeah, when they
right.
do something. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a matter
of record, isn't it?
I don't really know how to. So I might try and speak to some people this morning to get that organized. It is a counter kind of. Counter.
Do you know what I'm grateful for? What we haven't seen evidence of in this country, but you see it in America, like footage of people in New York being hounded by these Zionist mouthpiece, like agitators, like following someone, filming them. And saying, terrorist, you're a fucking terrorist. You're wearing that terrorist rag around your neck. Hey there, terrorist. Hey. And like they'll go up to like Finkelstein. And like hand him a beeper. See, this is for you.
Put it in his top pocket,
And like, real agitating, like trying to rile these people up and get them. It seems like they're trying to get them to do something violent so that they can get arrested or something. Whereas at least here, when we have protests, they're
corralled in. You used to get that outside Palestinian meetings. You get the wave sticking their phones in your face and. But the demos, they're kept behind the barrier, really. So,
Americans, man.
They are hateful. They are. I've seen footage. They are hateful, those fucking people, really. So
I can't imagine not punching him in the face. Exactly. If he came up to me like that.
Yeah.
Or like grabbing his phone, throwing it.
Yeah, but then they start squealing, assault. I've seen them do that over here.
In America? Surely someone would have shot them by now. Assault my ass.
No.
That's how, I thought that was the American way.
Yeah.
But they're the good guys, so they're not going to shoot them, are they? They're not going to rise to it.
No. No, we're not. No. No. There's also, actually, it's interesting. We've got a treat coming up for you. I think maybe next week or the week after. Ooh. We interviewed Jess Bernard, who's... Was she head of? She's still on the Labour Party NEC.
Yes,
is an inside agitator. Yeah, and is still head of Young Labour, which obviously the Starmerites have done everything they can to.
I should have memorized her credentials.
Yeah,
she's a member of the NEC.
Member.
This is her current.
Labour NEC member, council. Yeah,
socialist and trade unionist, youth worker, organizer. She was a councillor for Labour Party, and she tells us about how difficult it's been being.
Yeah, well, actually, that was the thing that I was trying to. One of the things that I was thinking about was just is what one of the things she talked about was. I'm thinking a bit just about how the only thing that unites. The Labour right, really. The only really strong ideological kind of glue that they have in many ways is their absolute hatred of the left, just more than anything else. And that you can see that in that, having beaten the left and got into power, they don't know what to do with power because they have no ideas outside of keeping the left out of power. But I was just been thinking a lot about that. I may have said about why. It's always been something that I've come up with friends, really, or friends that I've lost, about how vituperative they got when Jeremy came to power. You know, it's beyond this kind of insane hatred of the left, which is way past rational, which has to have a, you know, that kind of virulent feeling has to have a kind of psychological kind of base, obviously. And what I was thinking really was that what Jeremy did, what the left do, is what they show these people what they could have been and what they aren't, because the left, you know, Jeremy and, you know, are by and large moral and decent and kind, and the people on the right have forsaken that for personal ambition. And so it drives to be reminded of what they've, of how they've sold their souls.
Yeah.
Makes them crazy. And, we talked a bit about this, you know, that is the strongest emotion in many ways in human beings, is to deny that you've made a mistake. It's amazingly powerful, and people do anything to not admit that they're in the wrong, really, you know, and they will use drink or drugs or rage and anger to deny that. And that's why I think these terrible people, these West Streetings and Lisa Nandys, why they are so vituperative in their hatred of the left.
There it is again. Because
the left shows them what they have forsaken, really. And I wish I'd thought of that when I was talking to Jess, but I think that's just so important, really, that's where that anger comes from. I think, you know, it's just saying
the country would have been undeniably better if we had just supported each other.
You've sold the country out, you've sold the world out for some fucking designer glasses and some tickets to see Arsenal.
It's infuriating and heartbreaking. Yeah,
it
makes me vituperative.
I think we have to understand that about those people, really. But that's why, and I suppose maybe those nasty Jews as well. That some of the attacking like people, that also comes from that some of them know deep down that what they're supporting is genocide and murder and colonialism, and the way that they dull those thoughts is through aggression and violent action against trying to destroy when they're trying to kind of attack Norman Finkelstein. What they're trying to destroy is that tiny voice in the little part of their mind that says, no, this is, you are wrong. You're a monster. That's what I think.
He's literally a Holocaust survivor.
His parents were, yeah.
His
parents survived the war.
And you think you're speaking for the Jewish people and going up to them and doing that.
Yeah. Like, but it's their aggression is that they're trying to dull it, avoid, they're trying to, when they're attacking anti-Zionist Jews, what they're attacking really is that tiny voice at the back of their minds that tells them that they are wrong. I believe, not always, some of them are just horrible people, but some are
psychopathic.
Yeah, but I do believe that that's a very strong. Anyway, so we got Jesper. I thought she was lovely, really. She was really nice. She's got a very nice cat.
But we're sitting on it. We're going to probably put it out next week or something and let the egg hatch after keeping it warm.
That's not going any further.
But last week was fun. Thank you to Sammy Abuwarde.
Yes.
For coming on last week. Lovely. Hats off. Big ups, very dear friend, and You know what? He showed up to my birthday party and he went to the protest. So
he's a better person than you.
Person.
I said we should. I think we definitely should replace you with him.
Really. Yeah. He's handsomer, funnier. He's got a more charming style.
Yeah.
Or we could have both of us.
Yeah, well, that's what I think we were. You know, it's gonna the zoo, wasn't it?
It's gonna be
Steve Wright in the afternoon.
You mentioned in that episode as a hilarious joke. I wasn't taking you seriously, but you said, "I would never play in a fucking factory." You that was a fun gag in the because Sammy was talking about. Combining anarchism, activism, and performance.
Yes, and Dario Fo,
I'd not heard of before, going to protests and making a performance there and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you jokingly said, I would never play at a factory. Yeah. Give me my green room, my helicopter. That gave us, that prompted someone in the Patreon chat room to send in, his name's Conrad. He sent in a lovely message to the chat room. He was working at the Working Class Movement Library in Salford.
Yes, much supported by Maxine Peake.
Sorry, my phone made my microphone buzz. I'll hold it further away. He says, I was working at the Working Class Movement Library in Salford yesterday, and he saw this photo of Alexei dancing in the collectors, the cameraman, the poets, and the pits miners' strike exhibition. So there is a. It looks like you went to a miners' strike and did a little dance. There it is. There.
Yes.
What's going on in that picture?
That was a tour I did of South Yorkshire during the miners' strike, and I'm in a miners' institute performing. Doing my comedy stylings for the people of Grimethorpe, I think it was, or Armthorpe in South Yorkshire. It's still a sort of a venue, and I have done that,
I just wanted to give you your props because in case anyone took your joke seriously, Mark responded with a flyer for the miners 300. By the way, Patreon. Subscribers get to watch this on video, me holding up my phone to the camera with the picture. Miners 300 Days Benefit Cabaret. There's the lineup there and your name's on there.
Where was that at?
Miners 300 Day Benefit Cabaret. Sunday, 6th of January, Alexei Sale. Where the fuck was it? It doesn't say. But the flying.
That's the left, isn't it?
It's not got an address.
Don't
on
say
it.
Where the thing actually is.
Jim Barkley compared it.
All right.
Yes, Jenny LeCote.
Comedy Store OG.
And then there were some actors putting on a. They put on a play written by the miners and their wives.
Right. Okay.
Mm. And then you played in the interval for some reason while everyone's getting their drinks, apparently. So it's interval, Alexei. But anyway, you've done your part. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It was pretty cool to see that stuff. The Patreon chat room is very, very nice and heartwarming to get to see them all chatting to each other. It's like you've set up two friends on a date or something and they all start to get on really well. So it's nice to see. But if you want to support the show, patreon.com/AlexeySale podcast. You can subscribe for as little as £3 a month, I believe. I could be wrong. Patreon.com/AlexeySale podcast. And I always forget to say, in the description of this podcast or YouTube video, wherever you're watching or listening, the links are there. So just scroll down, read the description. If I'm speaking too quickly or you don't know how to rewind the podcast, read the description. We've got links there on how to support the show, where to send your emails to, etc. Thank you for everyone who is a member of the Patreon.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So upcoming events this Saturday and Sunday, I am interviewing Ash Sarkar in, I'm a comedian in Bath on Saturday. And then the Glee Club in Birmingham on Sunday. She's also got quite a list of people interviewing her in other places. She's got Frankie Boyle, I assume, up in Scotland. Josie Long, former guest on the show. Robin Ince. Always Robin Ince. Everybody is interviewed by Robin Ince. and others, I think. So she's got quite a, list. But as I am doing Bath and Birmingham Saturday and Sunday. And then excitement mounts because March the 5th, of course, is the day that the world changes when the fifth series of Alexis Sayle's Imaginary Sandwich Bar begins broadcasting on BBC Radio 4.
Very exciting.
6:30. It is very exciting.
Yeah. And this, and they will all drop on BBC Sounds on the same day. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
All 23 episodes. You did it in the American format this time, right?
Yeah.
Season 5, guest appearance,
23 guest, episodes. Yeah, guest appearance by, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, so that you know, that's, even if you don't listen to it, email the BBC and tell them how much you enjoyed it. And it is, it's political. There's stuff, I mean, but, and it is, you know, so we recorded quite a lot of it in December and then did more in February. But even so, the world, you feel like at the moment, obviously,
we keep changing.
The world changes every, I'd like to go back and record some more stuff, actually. But I think it's, well, it's got to be delivered by tomorrow. So unless I somehow manage to record some.
Shit.
Some more today. That's it. It's locked, really.
You can do it now, and I'll send it to Rich for you. You can just put some canned laughter on it.
I think there'd be a, yeah, I think there'd be a, you'd be able to tell, wouldn't you, really? Anyway, so it's, anyway, that's
all
it's,
right. That's what I think you got the podcast for. It's okay.
I'm very glad we did the stuff in, we really did the stuff in February just to kind of bring it. Most of it's timeless, you know. I mean, my humor, you know, is not dependent on, it's not topical humor, so it's not dependent on specific events, but it does very much capture the zeitgeist, I think. And yeah, as long, you know, yeah, so it's that 5th of March, anyway. Let's see. I you know, I was in series 3 trended at number 1 on Twitter for 3 days. I don't really know why. I'd like to try and get that back somehow. I didn't. But anyway, yeah, it's very frank. It uses the word genocide several times, which is unusual in a comedy show, and apartheid. And
next week's episode comes out before the 5th of March, so we've got that episode to plug it more.
Yeah.
If you want to tell Rich to send me any like promotional clips of it or something.
Oh yeah,
I'll do what I can with that. Yeah. And everyone out there, spread the word, please. And let's get if we were smart, we would have a big event for it. We'd like have a, we'd rent out a venue or a pub or something and have a big party. We'd have a listening party and then an after party and stuff.
Yeah. So what people do these days.
Sure, yeah. Like a premiere.
Yeah, right. Well, but we're not.
No.
So anyway, that's me. We're 23 minutes in, and that's me pretty much done, really. I don't know what else, you know, but having said...
Okay, let me explain an error I made.
Self-criticism, comrade.
Yes, it's important, isn't it? I don't want to take up too much airspace with this. I'm not going to over-explain it, but I made a snafu on the YouTube channel. I'm not going to bore you with exactly how it happened, but I ended up, all of our podcasts ended up being reposted on the YouTube channel. So there were two videos of each podcast episode. It meant we got a few more views. It also meant that our latest episodes, the viewership of them kind of got dissected between them. So it looks like last episode only had 700, 800 viewers. It's actually like double that or more than double that because the viewership got split between both videos.
I thought it was Zionist sabotage, but in fact it was you. Well,
yeah, it was me. I was like fiddling with the YouTube I finally tried to get our videos monetized on YouTube and we got rejected. And it meant I ended up going through a bit of a wormhole looking at our videos. Our podcast isn't, because there's like YouTube Premium and YouTube app and stuff. I thought if I'd registered our podcast as a podcast, it would help.
Right.
Get more listeners or help distribution of the videos. But it ended up just reposting every episode we've ever done onto the YouTube feed. But I also found out that we have nearly 1 million views on our YouTube. We're like 850,000 total views on the YouTube channel. And that's separate to our over 1 million listens on the podcast app. So that's very nice and promising and really cool. And while I'm talking, I'll keep talking and just tell everyone, shall I announce the auction result?
Yeah, so it's happened, as it's
for the Allegro Alexia. Today was the deadline. In our first week, it was something like 15 quid, and then it went up to 180. And I'm going to do this live. I'm leaving it to the very last second to give everyone a chance. You know, Scammy bid 120, Jorvik bid 150, Tim bid 180. Then Jorvik took it up again to 200.
Wow.
And then we have our winner, £210, goes to Sufyan Al-Jaida on Instagram. He bid that a couple of days ago and held on tight to his highest bid of 200. And £10. Congratulations, Sufyan. All you got to do, buddy, is make a donation of £210 to MAP, Medical Aid for Palestinians. Shall I say, or to your Palestinian charity of choice?
If they have a preference.
No, MAP is fine, Sufyan.
Your patron or whatever.
Go back to that website.
Yeah.
And send me photographic evidence. Take a screenshot of your receipt, your invoice, whatever. Send me evidence that you made that donation. And then I will get your address off you and send you our final Lego Alexi limited edition, 1 of 5, with a signed certificate of authenticity. Alexi Lego, Lego Alexi. I did a nice photo shoot with him and put it on the Instagram and put loads of filters on the photos and looking really good. Sexy.
Be the envy of all your friends.
That's going to be yours. 3 of 5. Don't know why it's the middle one I held on to, but there you go. Congrats, Sufyan, and thank you to everyone who took part.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And
do you want to tell us, Alexi, what film we should watch for next week's Alexi Cell Film Club?
We can't do Jess Bernard, can we, if we... we're talking about the film. Plus, I don't know. What film do you think we should? What did we think? We thought possibly.
We can do Jess Bernard. Jess Bernard wasn't a full hour, so we can Jess Bernard, do a nice 20-minute film club at the end. Give the listeners a nice meaty episode. But you haven't thought about it. Is that what you're saying?
I haven't thought about it a lot, really.
Got lots
Galaxy
of suggestions.
Quest. Yeah, Galaxy Quest would be. One, I don't know if I feel like watching that again very much.
It's a great film. Quite recently, it is a great film. What else? I've got lots of suggestions in the chat room if you want to hear some. But I thought, okay, I've been ignoring them because I've enjoyed your selections. But you have mentioned some. Oh no! I'll tell you what. I want you to be the one who chooses them. And you mentioned one, Time Lock Films, and the Bill Murray, Gina Davis, Time Lock bank robbery one.
And somebody came up with its title, which I kind of forgotten again. Somebody on YouTube said,
"That's easy."
What
for
it
me.
Was called?
It's easy for me to find out.
Should we do that one then?
It's called Quick Change.
Quick Change. Yeah. It's classic Bill Murray, early sort of mid-period Bill Murray, Gina Davis, Time Lock, Bank and Robbery. It's also about, I think it's a hymn of hatred towards New York, really.
And is it like a wacky and zany, silly comedy? Or is it
more
serious?
Well, in a way, it's more than that, though, because it's... No, I think it's about... well, I can't remember, really. I mean, I know Bill Murray really hates New York and wants to get out, so he has to physically get out of New York in a certain time before the robbery, you know, before he's captured for the bank robbery.
Mm.
I think it's about more. It's, you know, it's got kind of storylines. I can't remember if Gina Davis is in love with him or in love with somebody. It's got multiple kind of narrative strands, you know. It's not just about one thing, really.
It's from 1990. It's co-directed by Bill Murray and Howard Franklin, and it's both of their directorial debuts. Written by Howard Franklin. A man dressed as a clown robs a bank. Initially, no one takes him seriously because he's dressed like a clown.
Yeah.
And then he succeeds and is all set to leave the city. And I guess chaos ensues after that. It's quite middling reviews, but they tend to be good films if it's divisive.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Yeah, well, we could do that then. I'm going to say I like a time lock, so... Yeah,
you're not exploding with enthusiasm. But...
No. Right, yeah.
Well, would you be willing to watch in the next week and we discuss it?
What's it called? I keep forgetting what it's called.
Quick Change. From 1990. Change. And it's timely because I guess Saturday Night Live just had their 50th anniversary and Bill Murray came back and did a quite funny bit on there. And
yeah, he's an I don't know a lot about him, but I think he's quite an interesting... I mean, there's been some negative stuff about him, I think. Yeah. He's kind of a very interesting character, isn't he? On and off screen, really.
Mm.
You know, you hear interesting stories about him. I watched there's a movie about the opening nights of Saturday Night Live, which I've seen, which is kind of interesting, really. It's about, you know, doing live TV, which I have done with Britain's slightly strange attempt at Saturday Night Live, which was Chris Tarrant thing called OTT.
Oh yeah.
But it brought back that feeling of doing live TV. You know, which is an amazing thing. What were we talking about? We're talking to Absami about the Big Breakfast. I can't remember.
Me and you chatted about that.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because I watched a film.
How amazing
about
that was to be on it, you know. To be sitting alone in a front room of this house, and then a camera crew runs in, and then somebody says, "Oh, do this," and immediately, you know, it's going out live to the nation.
I found your clip, and you got interviewed by Lily Savage on the bed.
Yeah.
And then Bert Kwok comes in, like kicks the door down and jumps on the bed. Yeah. The guy who did all the Pink Panther films, was that him though? The guy who did the
Bert Kwok.
Yeah, he did all, he kept jumping out all throughout the episode Breakfast and like surprising whoever was on camera with some kung fu. And it was funny. And you were very like sweet. You're talking about tour, but you're being very sweet. It's like...
It was early in the morning.
Yes, early in the morning. You're lying on the bed with Lily Savage.
Yeah.
I recommend our listeners look it up on YouTube.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, Paul, yeah.
Yeah. You sent me a photo during the week of your dad with Yasser Arafat.
Yeah.
We have in one episode of... Sandwich Bar, we have a poem written by a vendor. They used to have poetry, I don't know if they still do, in the back of the Big Issue magazine, written by the vendors, their homeless vendors. And there was a poem written by Vendor 511 called "The Intifada," which goes, "He might be short, he might be fat, but we love Yasser Arafat."
Was that a while ago, was it?
Oh yeah, it was. You know,
well, I'll show this to the Patreon viewers. Yeah. I'll hold the video, the picture up, but to the screen.
He is short there. Your dad towers over him.
My dad's not the tallest guy, and Yas is even shorter than him.
Yeah.
Interviewed him a number of times. My dad's interviewed Muhammad Ali. My dad's sat down with Maggie Thatcher. My dad was a journalist, and he was the head of the Foreign Press Association here in London for two terms. He was the head of that, and so many big names.
He used to do that thing on BBC. Was it News 24 Deadline London or whatever?
Dateline London.
Dateline London. Yeah.
And I think Chris Kramer is the... No, that's from The Siege. Sorry, I'm blanking on your name, but the producer of Dateline London and my dad. You mentioned it last week with Sammy, and I failed to bring it up, but they had a media training business as well.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of like post-retirement for my dad, but like it was a side hustle. If anyone wanted... People who had not been on TV and then suddenly are thrust... Because of world events and onto the news to be interviewed. I mean,
we did touch on that with Jess Bernard, didn't we? How, you know, media training.
Was it with Jess we spoke about it? Yeah,
I think
Sammy.
It was. Yeah.
I think it was with Jess. A lot of people on the left Jeremy needed some media training, or maybe that was his charm that he didn't have any.
He didn't have it, but others probably do need it really. And I said that great. I hope Mick Lynch, when he retires from his head of the RMT, he should definitely, because he seems to be the epitome. I mean, he's not that left. I mean, some of the, because I know he supported the Labour Party of late, but I thought he was the perfect left person to be on. You know, the media really, and they would try and catch him out with these gotcha questions, and he would just blast through them really, you know. So Mick, if you're listening, start that media training business when you retire. I think it would be a boon to the left.
To the left, to the left. Hey, Alexi, tell us your, for people who don't, aren't aware, Or tell us your memories of Yasser Arafat, or what do you know about him? I'll give you the headline. He was the president of the Palestinian National Authority. He died in 2004. You know, I was just a teenager then, so my memories of exact details of his life and story are vague, but I know he was a symbol of... here's what I know. He almost made... a two-state solution happened.
He
spent years formulating an agreement that finally Israel agreed with. But then I think, is that when Israel's president got assassinated and it all fell apart?
Rabin, I'm not sure. I think it was, I remember Hillary Clinton saying, you know, if the PLO had agreed with the plan put forward by my husband, we'd be talking about 25 years of the Palestinian state now. I think in actuality, I mean, somebody more knowledgeable than me could talk about this, but I think in actuality, Israel was never kind of, the Oslo Accords has just been a holding agreement whereby it allowed Egypt, I think, to normalize relations with Israel. It allowed the Gulf states to normalize to a degree the relations, and it just allowed Israel to carry on with its annexation of Palestinian lands. I don't think it was ever really going to happen.
There was a socialist kind of leadership in Israel.
Well, that's
it was the right wing caused that abrupt ending to the talks, and who are now in power now? No.
Yes, although I think the Israeli left were always compromised by the fact that Israel is a settler colonial, apartheid state. And I don't see how you can be a socialist really and support that state. Really, the only thing that you could do as a socialist was really to support the. I mean, the dissolution of that state as an apartheid state, and so you would have to advocate for human rights for all people living on that land, and then by definition, it would cease to be a state in which only Jews have rights, which is the case at the moment. So I don't know how you square that circle, really. I forgot what we were talking about. It's an interesting question, really, and it's perhaps something we could get an expert on to talk about at some point, because it was that clearly the resistance to Israel, the Palestinian resistance, was in the early days entirely secular and by and large Marxist. You know, People's Liberation Front, you know, all those various groups were, and Arafat himself, the PLO, were secular.
Yeah.
And then the resistance now is entirely religious based. I mean, they are.
At its foundation, yeah.
Yeah, they are, you know, the
but you could easily argue Israel funded that.
Well, Israel Israel was instrumental in the founding of Hamas. Mm-hmm. And while they are not, I don't think that they're not, I mean, what's the difference? They're not like, I mean, they try and pretend that Hamas and Islamic Jihad and so on are like ISIS, and they're not, because they only have one, they're not interested in establishing a caliphate. They have only one enemy, and that enemy is Israel, as I understand it. So they're not interested, as, you know, like ISIS are expanding, you know, founding
world domination.
Yeah, world domination kind of thing. So, but it's an interesting, I don't know, it'd be interesting to find out. I mean, and it's not just that the resistance is now entirely political Islam, but also that the Palestinian, what was the PLO, has devolved into this Quisling government that, you know, carries out the wishes, you know, just aids in, you know, cooperates with Israel in the suppression.
Talking about the Palestinian Authority, yeah, West Palestinian Bank, Authority, yeah, corrupt as fuck, yeah.
Entirely corrupt, and, you know, is very much, you know, just acts as Israel's Israel's agent in the West Bank.
As an Arab,
really.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
You just can't have anything nice, you know.
Well, I mean, they are terribly powerful. You know, I mean, I think we were talking with somebody, you know, with people say, where is the Palestinian Mandela? Well, whenever a Mandela, like a unifying figure, ever arose, they would be, Israel would either kill them or jail them, really. And I mean, the most obviously is Omar Barghouti, is it Mustafa Barghouti, one of the Barghoutis, you know, the one that's been in prison for God knows how long now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult for a Palestinian leader to appear, you know, being subverted in so many ways. Nevertheless, it seems, I mean, the behavior of the Palestinian Authority is despicable, really. And it's, I don't know, we could maybe get somebody on to talk about how all that happened, really. And I suppose we could talk about how also, you know, the rise of political Islam, really, and what it is that gives that its sustaining power. Because, I mean, certainly, I mean, in many ways, the government of Iran, for instance, you know, is as corrupt. You know, many Iranian friends, and they talk about the, you know, fundamental corruption in Iran. So it's not there. It's not that they are free from materialistic corruption, because the Revolutionary Guard Corps and so on in Iran is corrupt as anybody. But nevertheless, there is something about political Islam that has sustained it in a way that secular ideas and secular movements have caused to be fallen by the wayside. So it'd be interesting to have an examination of what it is in those secular movements which doom them, and what it is about radical political Islam that sustains it, really, is the one thing that gives a kind of resistance in the Middle East. That's,
well, the easy answer is that's what the enemy wants, is they want the Arab resistance to look like fanatical maniacs.
Yes,
and, that's true. They want the only democracy in Palestine
to be corrupt and hated or to be feared so that they have an argument and they can just keep saying terrorist and point their fingers.
Yeah, while not that drop on them. I mean, not that in any conventional sense the PA is. I mean, when's the last time they had elections in the West Bank? Yes. A long
time
ago. As
if they'd be allowed any. And what's happening now on the West Bank is awful. And there was some, there was a televised Israeli interview with, was it with Dr. Omar? Or there's another doctor who's been arrested and Hussein something. My memory's so bad.
I don't know. I think that supposedly they're releasing the one from the hospital who walked towards the tank.
Is that the Indonesian hospital in Gaza?
No, this was the Al Wasi hospital.
Well, there was the fella the pediatrist who was working at the Indonesian hospital in Gaza when it was blown up, and they ended up, you know, the hospital was basically a bunch of tents outside the site of the hospital, and they accused him of giving safe haven to Hamas and storing weapons for them and stuff in the hospital, and he's been arrested for ages, and the people have been hashtagging like, where is Dr. I want to say Hussein or Hossam.
I think it is Hussein,
And they finally finally showed him on Israeli TV being interviewed by a journalist, and he was just, it was an interrogation, it wasn't an interview, and he's in shackles, surrounded by IDF soldiers or prison guards, heavily armored, guns pointing at him. This guy shackled and being quizzed and interrogated about why they were storing weapons. And he's like, I'm literally a podiatrist. I do surgery on little children. They like break him. At one point they start shoving him and stuff on TV.
Back.
And he's like, starts trembling, and it's just the most... It's just really fucked, man.
Yeah, this is what you Tracy Ann Obermans are supporting.
And he's like, I don't even work at that hospital. I went to that hospital because my hospital got blown up. Like, Yasser Arafat's real name, full name. I love Arabic names so much. Muhammad Abdul Rahman Abdul Rauf Arafat Al Qudwa Al Hussein. The longest fucking name in the world. He's an iconic dude. I'd love to, maybe I'll do a bit of reading about him. Maybe I'll give you a little lecture next week. And I know Sammy would know so much if we ever had him back.
I think he also turned out to be a disappointment, really.
Sammy?
No, not Sammy, but Yasser Arafat.
He turned out to be a human being, not a god.
It's difficult, but
it is difficult. All right, I'll do some reading. If anyone wants to help me in the Patreon, send me messages, send me your little opinions and bios, and I'll collate the info, and I'll talk to my family about him.
There's a very... there's a really interesting, not to plug the streamers really, there's a very interesting, very nice little Japanese, half-hour Japanese sort of comedy on Netflix, I think, called The Hotspot. It's about this woman who works in a hotel at the base of Mount Fuji.
Is it narrative or reality?
It's a comedy. It's a drama, comedy drama. But her co-worker is... an alien, or is half alien. But it's mostly about sort of domestic stuff, really. It's not really about... It's a bit authoritarian in tone in many ways, but it's a really sweet... If anybody's watching it or wants to talk about it, it's a really interesting, very different program. They show it, they drop it week by week, really, so you can't binge on it, but it's called The Hotspot, and it's fascinating, I think. Amazing, really funny performances, very Japanese, I think.
Great. I'm looking at it now. Yeah, it looks fantastic.
Yeah, so I've been watching that. We watched The Aftermath, which is there's a whole episode of imaginary sandwich bar where the guest is a former special forces assassin hiding out in the suburbs, you know, because every other Netflix or Amazon or, you know, movie is about former special, you know, blah, blah. But there's one called Aftermath, which is a, you know, which is sub Die Hard. In this case, he's an ex-US Army Ranger stuck with his little sister on a bridge that's been captured by terrorists for reasons I can't now remember.
Who stars in that?
Nobody, actually. You don't really recognize anybody. They're all people who are certainly new to me. But it's a decent watch if you're looking for something.
The movie from 2019.
Is it from 2019? Really?
Oh, it's got Alexander Skarsgård and Keira Knightley in it.
No, that's not that one then. That's a different one.
That's not
Aftermath.
It.
That's not that.
It's called The Aftermath.
Bro. No, that's, I don't know what the hell that is. So no, this is just called Aftermath.
Oh, Aftermath. Yeah. On Boston's Tobin Memorial.
That's
Bridge.
Right, yes.
5 stars. Yeah, no one famous in it. Okay, take it back. Yeah. Is that another recommend from you?
Relatively speaking, if you want a brainless kind of
movie,
sub Die Hard.
I rewatched in the last 7 days. I've watched Die Hard 2 and Die Hard with a Vengeance, and reminded myself how much I love that series of films.
Yeah. I said when especially we were in LA, we went to the Nakatomi Plaza to, you know, it's actually in Century to build, it's a town block in Century City to pay homage. But that film is the great, I mean, that is, remember coming out of the first one and feeling like when you come out into the street and the world feels different, really, you know, you're so pumped up by that first movie. I think I was stopping, you know, walking in front of cars and stuff. I felt so sort of like I
think throughout the '80s, all the action films in the '80s, it was leading up to that. Cause that's 1988. And I think that's the film they were trying to make. Like
right.
When the action star, action hero, action set pieces, villain, yeah. It's all just pinnacle. It's all just the best, isn't it?
Yeah.
It can't be praised enough. And I know it's not an underrated film, but it can't be praised enough.
No. Die Hard 2 is, again, I mean, there's also an episode of Sandwich Bar, which is about, it was partly about sequels, really. I don't really mention, but Die Hard 2 is one of those where the sequel is a match to the original, really.
It's really
in some
cool.
ways,
really creative.
Is even better, really.
They could have done it in another tower, in another city, you know, but yeah. They didn't. It was like, let's do it completely different, but have so many throwback callbacks to the first film.
Yeah, exactly.
And the characters. It's
like a bad follow-up sequel is like Speed 2,
yeah,
which is just like Speed, but it's on a boat.
Yeah. that's not the way to do it.
No.
You need something new.
Yeah.
So that's in an airport. And then the third, and it's different director and writer on the second one, but then the third one, they bring the writer and director of the first one back.
Yeah.
But it's, again, so different. It's sprawled across the whole of New York.
That's
the one
with Samuel
race.
L. Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only question, but is that they've thrown in a black guy and his main trait is that he hates white people and like... Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because it's so long ago, that's... I'll let it slide.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is just... But his performance in that is so fantastic.
Yeah.
A brilliant film, number three. And I remember the PlayStation 1 game, Die Hard Trilogy, where you would play through each one of those films. And it's brilliant. Very gory. But I wanted to recommend another Japanese thing. There's a film on YouTube, 45-minute long film called Yusuf Days in Japan. Yusuf Days is a jazz drummer, and he's got an amazing band, really fantastic musician. Yusuf, Y-U-S-S-E-F, Yusuf Days in Japan is a film he made of a trip to Japan. And it's a blend between a live performance and a documentary of him going around Japan talking to really interesting people. But the live performance is at the base of Mount Fuji. Oh, and it's done outdoors, right. And it's not done to an audience. It's just done to a camera crew.
Okay.
With a couple of, with a guest musician for a couple of the songs, this Japanese musician who plays a traditional instrument. And the backdrop is Mount Fuji. And you can sometimes just hear the wind rustling through the trees. And the music is so good and shot so beautifully. I can't recommend it enough.
That sounds good. It's
soul-soothing stuff.
And to bring it all back, say one of the great, I think, a movie I loved at the time, I've seen since, is Lost in Translation with Bill Murray and youngish Scarlett Johansson, set in Japan.
That's right. That's a great film.
Yeah.
Good reminder, listeners, readers, sorry, by next week, your homework is to watch Quick Change. And that's your homework too, Alexi, and my homework too, Talal. 1990s Quick Change with Bill Murray and Gina Davis. Gina Davis used to be an Olympian archer.
Really?
Yeah. Before she was a film star.
Wow.
I love her to pieces, actually.
Then she made a pirate movie directed by her husband, didn't it? Which ended their career, really. Cutthroat Island.
I've not seen Cutthroat Island.
I think it was called Cutthroat Island. It sort of ended. It was one of those movies that just ended their career.
Well, of course, rather she's,
like,
why was it really, really rather terrible? Rather
like Reckless Kelly for me. I've never worked since. I've literally never worked since.
No, you were in Casualty for 3 episodes, Alexi.
Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah.
Of course, she's incredible in Thelma and Louise, but The Long Kiss Goodnight, her action film.
Well, that's the original. I mean, that's one of the original when it was still that's the hit woman with amnesia, isn't it? It's that one.
Yeah.
Long Kiss Goodnight. Yeah.
That's right.
That was an original idea before that had been used 20,000 fucking times.
And then Bourne Identity perfected it.
Yeah.
Yes. She gradually remembers her past. She's a government agent. And I haven't seen this since I was a kid. Oh, it's written by Shane Black. That explains why it's so good. And it's got Sam L. Jackson in it. But I remember this scene where she's like stuck. She's trapped somewhere. And she like pours lighter fluid. She makes a little funnel out of some card and pours lighter fluid into a crack and blows her way out of this. I can't remember exactly. Or she's like trying to break open a door or something. But she's slowly remembering her skills, her secret agent skills.
Yeah.
She's so charming. It's weird that she's not really done anything recently. Maybe one day we could do The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yeah.
As in our film club.
Yeah.
Where's her film? I want to see the latest thing she's done. Oh, no, fuck off. She's in Blink Twice, which came out last year. She still acts. Acts a lot. Yeah, Blink Twice was Lenny Kravitz's daughter, Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut. She played Catwoman in the new Batman film. Not her hugest fan. And she's in Glow, which I haven't watched yet, but you sing praises of Glow.
I liked it at first, got tired of it. Interesting, Kate Nash acting in that, you know, British singer.
Right, on that absolute cracking bombshell there.
Yeah.
Watch Quick Change before next week. Support our Patreon, patreon.com/AlexisHellPodcast. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment, press the like button. We get thousands of views, but only hundreds of likes, thumbs ups on YouTube.
Yeah, so more give of us that. Those.
If you're listening on your podcast apps, please leave a little review. And tell us what you think of the show. Let me see our. Let me tell you our latest review. I'll read one out. Maybe yours will get read out on the show too. Here's our reviews. Okay, someone wrote this on Tuesday. The Jones. Oh, time and again, this 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Time and again, Alexi Sale provides a true left-wing compass to guide us through those horrible times. A real people's treasure. P.S. Where do you get the music? My friend's 4-year-old loved it. when it came out, came on in the car, and was upset when it faded and you started talking.
Oh, well, nice question there, buddy. That's Tarbush Records makes our music. Tarbush Records is my brother and his childhood best mate who lives out in Dubai. They are a little record company called Tarbush Records. You can find them on SoundCloud and YouTube and Instagram. And there is a link in the description of the podcast. Click on the Tarbush Records and it will take you to whatever I've linked it to. There you go. Music by Tarbush Records. You click it, it takes you to their Instagram page. And through there, you can find all the links to their websites and stuff. Thanks for being a fan of the music. I will post the full version of the song on our YouTube channel. How's that, Alexi?
That's great.
Our intro music. It is a nice song, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very, I was thinking that, listening to it before.
When we first met, not when we first met, but when we first met to discuss doing the podcast, we met at that cafe in central London, sunny day. We were sitting in the street table. And I said, oh, Alexi, what kind of music are you thinking for the theme music for the show? And you looked up at me, you nodded, and you went, hip hop. I was like, yes, this guy is a bad man. I want to make his podcast, bro. All right, been a pleasure.
And yes,
we run out of time.
Me too. Yes.
Any last words?
No, I really haven't. I suppose I should talk a bit more about Mr. Trump and Mr. Musk at some point, but.
Oh my God! Not you now. Fired like 4,000 people from the part of the government that regulates planes, and then the next day, a plane like somersaulted onto the runway and exploded.
And he blames that wasn't Canada, but
it was an American plane.
Delta, yeah.
And then most recently fired thousands of staff from the national parks. Which is. I think the most appealing thing about America is its natural beauty, and it's why I want to go there the most.
Yeah.
But to think that there's no one there to regulate, like the bears, bear attacks and stuff, makes me not want to go so much anymore. But it's disgusting behavior. Fucking
hell. Yeah.
Fucking hell. And my dad always said, when America sneezes, Britain gets a cold, which means... You know, give it a few years and we'll be going down the same road. Kind of.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's true.
Yes, we'll certainly feel the effects of... Yeah. Maybe I don't quite know what I think really at the moment, so... I'll formulate a viewpoint and then communicate it.
Almost makes you vituperative, really. My word of the day. Thank you for teaching me a new word. I looked it up. It's bitter.
I don't think you're using it quite correctly there. But that's fine.
It says it means bitter and aggressive.
Yeah, but it's more like a description of a thing. I'm very bad.
Bitter and abusive.
Yeah, but it's like
vituperative.
I don't think you can. I suppose you can feel vituperative, but it's more likely that your speech, or specifically your speech, would be vituperative.
You're right. You're right. It's more the synonyms are like scolding and scathing. You can't feel scolding. You have to be scolding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I tried, all right?
Yeah, well, it's your second language, isn't it?
Fuck you. Say goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Alexi Sell podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.